You were perfectly nice to the guy at the coffee counter this morning, and you were patient as all get out with the coworker who asked you the same question for the third time. And then you walked through your own front door and said something to the person you love most that you would never in a million years have said to either of those strangers. So if you've ever thought, why am I so mean to the people I love the most? Today's episode is for you. The short version is that everywhere else in your life, you're choosing your behavior one interaction at a time. And at home, you've stopped choosing because your brain runs on something called context. And the people you love are the most repeated context you've got. So as always, I'm going to give you all the science and the background behind what context really is. And then I'll give you the three steps to stop running on autopilot with the people you love. So stay tuned. Welcome to the Relationships Made Easy podcast, where I give you the exact steps to create connection, joy, and ease in all your relationships, whether it's with your partner, your family, your friends, or most importantly, yourself. I'm Dr. Abby Metcalf, psychologist, best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and the bossy Jewish mom you didn't know you needed. Each week, you'll get no-nonsense, research-backed strategies served with humor and love, so you can stop second-guessing yourself and start having the relationships you deserve. You'll always leave knowing exactly what to say and do to shift your relationships for the better. So let's get to it. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host. You know who I am, Dr. Abby Metcalf. And this is the second episode of season nine. Happy to be here. And just a quick shout out that my new book, Stop Reacting, Start Connecting, will be out at the end of September, depending on when you're listening to this, of 2026. And I'm pretty excited about it. I think it's pretty amazing. So if you like my other books, I think you're really going to love this. And if you haven't read my other books, what are you waiting on? Okay. So why am I so mean to the people I love the most? I've gotten this question a bunch in the last like 6 months. It's really interesting. It keeps coming up in different places. And I've been sort of just answering it briefly on, like social media and other places. And because I didn't think it could have a whole podcast, you know, I didn't know if it was a whole episode. But then I started really researching it. I thought, well, let me research the answers to this, because I know what I think of kind of like off the top of my head are the answers. But as always, I learned something. Isn't that wonderful? I love my job so much. So I want to start by saying there isn't one reason, you know, you're sometimes meanest to those you love the most. Obviously, you might be exhausted because you didn't sleep last night or had a terrible day at work or grew up in a house where this is just what people did with their stress. You know, all of that's real and it counts. But underneath all those reasons is usually something else. And that is that you're on autopilot with the people you're closest to, and you're generally not on autopilot in that same way with everybody else in the world. So your worst behavior, it's not aimed at the people you love. It's just the only behavior you've got that gets to run without any supervision, really. And they happen to be the ones standing there when it runs. That's really what this is about. So yes, you're more patient with total strangers a lot, and then get home and you're horrible to your partner or your dad or your sibling or your best friend, and you don't understand it, which usually brings you to a story you start telling yourself about what that means. You know, your inner narrative is often something like, well, does this mean I really don't love my partner? Or am I just a bad person and I'm good at faking it in public? You know, you're not a bad person. Come on. I say with Jewish mother love, you're not a bad person. This isn't a character problem. It's really more of a, how do I want to say, like a mechanical one, an autopilot one. What you're looking at, it's not evidence about your personality or your heart. It's really evidence about how repetition works. Okay. And I'll get into that more in a minute. But what I do want to say, so when I've brought this up before with clients, what I find is that they'll sort of say, well, isn't this sort of that kick the dog effect thing, you know, the displaced aggression thing? That's the the pushback I get a lot. And then I Googled this question. I do that a lot when I'm researching something. I'll just Google it. Like, what are people? And I saw a lot of, I like to see how other people answer things. You know, I think I've talked about this before. Whenever I'm researching anything I give to you guys, I write out all my ideas, my fabulous, fabulous ideas. And or a lot of times I'm looking at a piece of research that I want to build a podcast on or something like that. But anyway, and then I will often Google and see what other people say about this. Like what are other people answer? How are they answering this question? And it's really interesting because I saw a lot of the same answer pop up, which basically boiled down to this same thing my clients would say, that it's like displaced aggression. You know, your boss was awful. You couldn't yell at your boss because you want to keep paying your bills. So the anger had to go somewhere and it lands on whoever's, you know, standing in your kitchen when you get home. So basically kick the dog, you know, if people have never heard that before, this might sound horrible. When we talk about displaced aggression, they talk a lot about, you know, you're angry at work, you come home and kick the dog. I hope it's a figure of speech, not real for anybody, but I know people aren't nice to their animals sometimes anyway. And I'm not saying that this displaced aggression isn't a thing. Of course, I'm not saying that. There's a lot of research on displaced aggression and it's all very real. Displacement is going to happen in your life. It's going to happen. It's just not the answer to this particular question, because if displacement was the whole issue, then that anger would go everywhere and it generally doesn't. Okay. Generally does. Now, and I'm going to say, I know you're not a saint. I say with love, right? And you might have gotten short with your neighborhood barista this morning for getting your coffee order wrong. Or maybe that was you I saw giving me the finger in traffic yesterday because you thought I cut you off. I don't know. That happens, but it's not happening every day to everyone you meet the way it's probably happening at home, you know, and especially how quick it often happens at home. So displacement tells you the anger had to go somewhere. What it doesn't tell you is why it keeps going to these people you love the most and not everybody else. And again, some people do have it everywhere. That's a different episode. I have done episodes on anger management in the past and things like that. You can go look. But I'll link to those as I always do. And for anyone new listening, whenever I say I'm going to link to that, or I talk about the research, or I talk about the free giveaway today, which is amazing, of course. All of that can be found on the website. You just find the blog. I write a blog for every single episode, abbymedcalf.com. Or if you're watching on YouTube, you can look under the video. So any of those places will give you all the links, all the goodies that I talk about. All right. So what's the bigger thing sitting underneath all of it, right? That's what we want to answer. And researchers have found that roughly 43% of what you do in a day is something you do almost every day in the same spot. And most of the time, obviously, you're not even thinking about it while you do it. So in other words, almost half the time, you're not choosing what you're doing in the moment. You're just running on autopilot, which means your day isn't mostly made up of thoughtful, mindful, fabulous decisions. Your day is mostly made up of triggers. And the trigger is usually a place you're standing in, right? There's triggers, there's a reason. So think about your own life for a second here. Just you know, give me a minute here to explain a little more. How many times have you walked into your own kitchen or seen your partner's face across the table or heard that particular sigh, you know, your mom makes on the phone, you know what I'm talking about? It's probably thousands of times, and nothing else in your life is even in the neighborhood of this. Your coworkers change. That barista I just mentioned changes. They change all the time, right? The setting changes. So out there, you've got to out in the world, you have to show up and pick your behavior kind of every single time. And because you have to, you do. Get it? But your home is your most repeated, stable and repeated place. And when I say stable, I don't mean there's not craziness going on in your home, but it's stable in the way that the same things happen a lot, which means it's where your habits are the strongest. And that matters because of something researchers found so I found this one, it was so cool. I found this one study that pulled together 64 studies. Okay. I love a meta study. I love me a meta study. What is Abby like? A meta study. So I always look for those because, you know, I don't want to read every single one, right? So I'm looking for studies that, and I found one that pulled, and obviously, again, I'll link to all this, but that pulled together 64 studies, 64 on how well anybody predicts their own behavior. Okay. And when a behavior has been repeated enough in a steady setting, what you did last time is what predicts what you'll do next time. Choice is really taking a backseat in more ways than you can imagine. So it's only when the behavior is new to you or the setting keeps shifting that you're really choosing at all. I know. So think it through. And choosing works. You do choose, but only where a habit hasn't formed yet, which is pretty much everywhere except at home, again, with the people you live with and love or whatever, okay, with the people you see the most, spend the most time with. So you're not choosing worse with the people you love, you're choosing less. And I would say that, I would argue that most of the time you're not choosing at all. That's the thing. That gap between what you meant to do or what you would want to do or your dream self and your knee-jerk reaction, you know, that gap, like what your body is doing before you decided anything, before you even thought about anything, is the thing. By the way, I ended up writing that whole book about stop reacting, start connecting. So again, it's the reason it's so much harder at home, that it does come down to this a lot. It isn't that you don't care enough about them. It's not about that. It's that home is precisely the place where caring stopped being the automatic response. That's it. Okay. And again, that's why I wrote a whole book. This comes up so much, the reactions, the quickness, the biology of it all, the psychology of it all, how much we just go, right? And we don't even realize you know how that is. You're face palming later going, I can't believe I said that, or why didn't I say that? It's because of those reactions in the moment. So if you're anything like me, you're bad at asking for help, like weirdly bad at it. I've been a busy gal for a long time now. Kids, partner, my own business, all the things that make for a full life these days. And my instinct always was to just white knuckle it and do it all myself. But I say it on this show all the time. Ask for help. You don't have to do it all. And meanwhile, there I was doing it all. And I finally changed all that, from my podcast editor to the person who got 10 years of photos off my phone and into albums I actually look at. I found amazing people to help me on Upwork, and I've been using them for the last 8 years. And you don't need a business for any of this, any project, any size, planning an event, sorting out something at home, finally handling the thing on your list you keep avoiding. Upwork lets you find, hire, and pay expert freelancers all in one place. With Business Plus, you can access the top 1% of talent on Upwork, and with AI-powered shortlisting, you'll get matched to the right freelancer in under 6 hours. No endless searching required. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help you and your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
And so the other question I get, the kind of pushback I'll get is, someone will say to me like, but don't I understand them better than anyone? Like the people that I'm closest to? And the answer to that is you would think so, right? But the research says the opposite. And this is really important. And there were some researchers, Savitsky, Kesar, and Epley, okay? And they ran a series of experiments on something they named the closeness communication bias. And you know me with my research, I was pretty head over heels about this research. So, and it's been replicated, but let me just say. So here's what it is. They had people try to get a specific meaning across using a phrase that could be taken, let's say, more than one way. Sometimes with a stranger and sometimes with a close friend or spouse. That's how they had them do it, all right? So they had them use a phrase, could be taken a few different ways, and they had them talk to someone they never met before or a friend or a spouse, someone like that. And everybody in the study felt more confident that they'd been understood by the person they were close to than by the stranger. And then the researchers went and checked how they'd really done, and the spouses and friends did no better than the strangers for understanding what the person was trying to say. Same accuracy, but more confidence that you're getting it across to the people you love. And I'm going to tell you why this matters. You know me, I'm always trying to link. When I give you action steps, I want to link them to the research. So just stick with me here. It's going to link to what I'm telling you to do today. One of the researchers, Epley, I think it was, described it as closeness giving you the illusion of insight rather than the real thing. And I think that's exactly right. With a stranger, you know you have to do the work, right? They don't know you. They don't understand you. You're going to explain yourself more. So you do. You explain yourself. You give them the context. Maybe you check that it landed. But with your person, you let your guard down and assume they're seeing whatever you're seeing, right? So you say it's fine. And then you're generally hurt when they go ahead and believe you. They should know. So if you put those two things side by side and look at what you're working with, okay, so just for a moment, with the people you love most, you're running on the strongest autopilot you've got. You're doing the least work of anyone to make yourself understood. And you're the most confident of all that you're doing fine, that you're doing it great. And that's the setup, okay? That's the real setup. So I'm going to give you the three steps to stop running on autopilot, okay? So I'm going to give them to you now, and you're going to see they link to the research, all right? So these are the three steps to stop running on autopilot with the people that you love or who you love. I guess it would be who you love. Okay, anyway, okay? And so, okay, I want to make sure I'm saying this right. So, okay, let me just jump in. All right, sorry. So step one is to break the context, not the promise. That's how I want to say that. So think about who you are on vacation for a minute. I know, don't you love vacation you? I love vacation me. You're nicer on vacation, right? Usually everybody is. You're patient, you're funny, you're fabulous, you're interested in what your partner's saying, what your kids are saying, what your mom said. And then you get home and like on the way home from the airport, you're snapping at your kids, right? Or later, a day later, you're snapping at your partner in the kitchen about, you know, how they loaded the dishwasher or whatever. And you're going to tell yourself, oh, that's because vacation is restful. And yes, of course it is. But there is something bigger going on. And it's this. On vacation, none of your stuff is around you. None of your same triggers. You don't have your kitchen or your front door or that chair that your partner sits in. And your stuff is what tells you what to do to a large extent. That's all a habit is in a lot of ways. You do the same thing in the same place enough times and your brain hooks the place to the thing, right? So after that, the place does a lot of the work for you. And you walk in your front door and the snapping is already loading up before your coat is off. And you didn't pick that, right? You didn't pick that. The door picked that, or walking in the front door, which again is why I talk about setting intention a lot, you know, before you walk in the door, before, you know, you're trying to interrupt that pattern. But I'm going to give you some better stuff today to do it. And again, because it's not just me talking, this is the research shows that when you land somewhere new, the only habits that come with you are the ones where a piece of the surroundings came to. Everything else just sort of stops. So I can think about like going to the gym, you know, and whenever I went on vacation before, I would never go to the gym. I was like, I don't want to go to the gym. But for a long time, I was really getting into the gym and, you know, wanting to do that. So I would do on vacation what I would do at home, which is that I would leave my sneakers and my workout clothes out, like laid out, so that I could just wake up, put them on and go and do it. And I would do that on vacation. And it was much easier when I was trying to work out at a different time, like in the afternoon or something or whatever. It was never happening, never happening. So I had to do a lot of the stuff like I would do at home, right? And you think about it, when I do my spiritual practices, I often
bring some of the same stuff with me, maybe a candle that's special or something to help me kind of get into that space when I'm away. Otherwise, I tend to do a lot of my spiritual stuff in the same places, like here at my office or in my car or the special place at home. Like I have places I do it where I get right into it. And when I try to do it somewhere new, it's harder. Does that make sense? Think about yourself in Cabo, you know, you weren't trying harder. You weren't more motivated. You weren't more disciplined. You didn't work on yourself on the plane, right? You were just somewhere that wasn't set up to make you snap at your partner or your kids. Motivation isn't what does that. It's the change of scenery. So I want you to, you know, stop making promises to yourself in the car on the way home. And instead, you're going to go find the one repeating setting where you are reliably at your worst. That's what we're going to do. And I have a great free download for today to help you do this, but I'll get to that in a minute. And I don't mean, you can't say, oh, my marriage is where I'm reliably worse. I'm not talking about that. I mean the actual like lived coordinates of it. I mean specific, granular. The first 10 minutes after you walk in the door, or the being in the kitchen between dinner and bedtime, or the Sunday phone call at 4 o'clock to your mom. You know, change one physical thing about it and you're going to see a difference. You know, come in through the side door instead of the front door. Sit in a different chair. Take that call in front of your house on the sidewalk instead of sunk into, you know, the same couch cushion you've been having that same conversation on for 9 years. That's how you make a change. I know how small this sounds. I get it. And I want you to do it anyway, because this isn't about symbolism. It's really not. You're doing it because when the cue goes missing for that certain behavior, the automatic response has nothing to fire on. And it's in that little gap where nothing happens, that you get to choose again. You get a vote again. And it's again, there's research for this. I'm not making it up. It's great stuff. Okay, so that's the one thing you want to do. Step two is you want to say the extra sentence. And this one again comes straight out of the research I just gave you, right? It's going to cost you 4 seconds. That's it. Again, there's one thing you do automatically for strangers that you have likely stopped doing for the person you love. And it's I'm going to call it for today the extra sentence. So for ease of you remembering, the one where you explain yourself. So with a stranger, someone you don't know well, or maybe someone at work, just like a coworker, you might say, "Hey, would you mind moving your bag? I've got a bad back and I really need to sit down." Okay? Now with your partner, there might be that same a bag sitting there where you want to sit, and you look at them, you point, you're like, "Seriously?" And you point at the bag because, you know, after all these years, they know about your back. And if they're not moving the bag, then it must mean something about how they feel about you, right? It's got to be that they don't care. They don't love me. They're an idiot. Oh, what a jerk. They're so inconsiderate. Do you see it? But it doesn't mean a thing about how they feel about you. They didn't see the bag for whatever reason. And you've gone and built an entire case about it. Maybe they were tired and they just stuck the bag down without thinking. It's a story you're telling yourself. These aren't facts. They're just not. So I want you to not over explain, I'm going to say it that way, but you know what I mean. I want you to explain more to the people you love in exactly the way you'd explain more to a stranger. Okay. Say the part you think is obvious. And then, you know, say the part you're certain they already know. And yeah, it might feel a little ridiculous at first, but give it a try. Okay. So, and don't like over explain, like to justify for 10 minutes. I'm not talking about that, because you wouldn't do that with a stranger either. I'm just trying to point out that you want to add that extra sentence or maybe two. That's it. And this is a lot easier to believe in your own handwriting. Okay. It's better that way than, you know, me, Abby, speaking at you. So the free download for this episode is to do exactly this. I'm calling it something. It's like, what would you have said to a stranger? It'll take you 2 minutes and it'll really help. So you can download that again below the video or come to the website and find this episode. It'll be on the blog. So, okay. So do that. I would say definitely do that. And I do have a great Therapy to Go bundle for this if this is something that you really struggle with, which I'll talk about at the end. Okay. So step three is to name the direction before you open your mouth. And I want you to think that this is the truth of it. Everything you do in any relationship is a move. And there are only two directions it can go. You can go toward the person or away from them. That's it. Think of it that way. A sharp tone is moving away. A real question, a true curiosity is moving toward. Your phone in your hand while they're telling you about their day, right, is away, right? Literally putting your phone in a bag or in your pocket while they talk to you is toward. Does that make sense? Okay. And I know there's stuff you've been calling, you know, oh, I'm just tired, but it's moving away. Okay. It's moving away. And think of it that way. You know, we want to bring intention. So before you open your mouth, I want you to ask yourself that one question. Is this toward or away? That's it. It is so helpful. You'll be shocked, even with what you say, how you say it, when you say it. And obviously you need to be mindful in your moments to stop and notice when or how you're doing this. So if you haven't downloaded my free mindfulness starter kit by now, I seriously don't know what you're waiting for, but anyway, but please go do that. So that's it. Those are your three steps. This isn't as super long because it doesn't need to be. You can get the free download, What Would You Have Said to a Stranger? And I do have a fabulous Therapy to Go bundle. So if this is an issue for you, like you're somebody who really struggles with this, I'm going to highly, highly suggest you get the Therapy to Go bundle, which again, you can access under the video or on the website. And I have a ton included in this one. First of all, you get that free, the free download in the Therapy to Go bundle. So if you don't want to download two things, just get the bundle. So it's in there. But also there's an autopilot worksheet. There's a context disruption menu, like little checkboxes to help you like with the different contexts and to try to get more granular with that and give you ideas. Is this a habit or is this a conflict? There's an assessment tool in there to help you know like what you're looking at. Are you going toward or away? That forward check, there's another worksheet about that. There's a 1 week tracker for all this, and there are journaling prompts. I know it's a ton. There's a lot in there. I don't always have, you know, I really just try to create whatever I think is best. Sometimes that's five things, four things, six things. It depends. What I think is really going to help you get to stop this behavior or change this behavior or do something better. So that's what it is. The Therapy to Go bundles are $10. You know, you can get it or not, or you can get the free download and see if you like it. If it feels like it's helpful, you might want to get the bundle. Okay. That is it for this week. As always, thank you for hanging out with me. If you have a question you would like me to answer or a topic you'd like to address on a future episode, please, you can email me at abby@abbymetcalf.com. You can go to the website and the Let's Connect page. You can get to me there. But I also want to really highly recommend you. I think this is episode 394. We have almost 400 episodes and they are all up on my website. So if you are, you know, I need to learn about empathy or I need to learn about, I don't know, more about mindfulness, just put those keywords in my website and it'll all come up. All the past episodes, the blog articles, everything is there. All the research, all the resources, everything's there. Everything's there in one place because I love you. And I want to make it easy for you to change your life. That's it. Have an amazing week. Thank you. Thank you as always for being here with me. And hey, I'm going to see you real soon. Thank you for spending time with me today. If you're loving what you're learning here, come join my One Love Collective. It's my private community where we take these conversations even deeper. You'll get a ton of bonus content, live Q&As with me, guided visualizations, journaling prompts, scripts, and an incredible community of like-minded people ready to support you as you create more ease and joy in all your relationships. It's all waiting for you at abbymetcalf.com or right on Substack. I'll see you next week.